Good morning. I'd love to talk to you about dinosaurs and fossils. Sound like a good subject to talk about? Are you interested in dinosaurs and fossils? I think we all are. But I'm going to talk about dinosaurs and fossils. I'm going to start by telling you a story about a boy who wanted to build Brontosaurus. Okay, and then we're going to go beyond the Jurassic Park myth to see what the true story is about dinosaurs and fossils. And I'm Steve Austin. I'm the adjunct professor of geology at Cedarville University, Cedarville, Ohio. And if you're looking for a good university that has a creation emphasis, Cedarville is one of the best in the world, a geology emphasis. If you're interested in rocks, if you're like those subjects, you'll definitely want to think and consider a university with a strong emphasis on creation and the flood, such as Cedarville University. The boy grew up in San Francisco area during the 1950s. And it was the year 1953, September 7, that Life magazine, remember when magazines used to be kind of on the table all the time? Anyway, but Life magazine published a picture of what? Brontosaurus on the front cover and a discussion of 2 billion years of evolution. And it was Brontosaurus there. You know, you see the snub-nosed sauropod. And you see in the background there one of those flying reptiles. Okay, let's see over here, one of those guys. And then what's that? Anybody know what that is? Stegosaurus, right. Yeah, you know your dinosaurs. That's good. Okay. And anyway, that was the thing that got the boy going. He thought about Brontosaurus in the swamp. And he saw the 1920 version that was in the Smithsonian Museum. There they are, the sauropods. And he went right back to looking at the diagrams of the original Brontosaurus. There you see him. He's in the Carnegie Museum in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Earl Douglas was a field paleontologist that back about 1900 excavated the skeletal material for the dinosaur. And Earl Douglas, when he dug the dinosaur up, was kind of obligated to Andrew Carnegie, the builder of the museum, to have the biggest and the most ferocious animal that he could find. Okay, and unfortunately, the skeleton that Earl Douglas found in Utah and brought to the Carnegie Museum in Pittsburgh had peg-like teeth, not fang-like teeth. And it had a duck bill kind of thing on it. And Earl Douglas decided that he would put on the animal, the fossil, a snub-nosed dinosaur head. You see that head right there? Okay, which has fang-like teeth, which made Andrew Carnegie very happy to have a nice, ferocious dinosaur. Okay, well, anyway, that's the dinosaur discovered in Utah in 1909, later mounted in Dinosaur Hall and Carnegie Museum, in the Natural Museum. And where do I come from? I come from Pittsburgh. Okay, and I did my PhD in geology at Pennsylvania State University, and so I know the Carnegie Museum. Anyway, the boy was fascinated by dinosaurs. The boy wanted to build a Brontosaurus. Okay, the goal was to reconstruct Brontosaurus and the dinosaurs' world. Okay, his backyard was pretty big. The Brontosaurus is what, about 80 feet long? How wide is his backyard? His backyard was only about 60 feet wide, But that's okay. The neighbors wouldn't mind if the head or the tail stuck over into the neighborhood. And so he wanted to reconstruct the brontosaurus and the dinosaur's habitat. The problem was he found that geologic evidence that confronts a great myth surrounding brontosaurus. And the solution, he discovered a historic framework of the Bible and used it to understand dinosaurs. Okay, the Bible helped him understand dinosaurs. There you see the bones, very beautifully preserved. There's a pen for scale. So what, about 3 or 4 feet long, femur bones of dinosaurs. This is from the dinosaur deposit in Utah. Brontosaurus's home is in Utah, Dinosaur National Monument near Vernal, Utah. Okay, and the boy's home is over there in San Francisco, California. Okay. The Dinosaur National Monument is part of what's called the Grand Staircase. Maybe you've heard about that. The Grand Canyon in northern Arizona has about 4,000 feet of strata. The crystalline basement rock called granite and gneiss and schist are there. And then on top of that, it's about 4,000 feet of strata up to the rim of Grand Canyon. Then beyond the Grand Canyon, as you go north into Utah and toward Colorado and Wyoming, as you go northward, you come to the Grand Staircase, the other strata. And there's something like 3 miles thickness, 15,000 feet of strata exposed there. And Dinosaur National Monument is in the upper layers of that. Here you see it. That's the upper layers. 15,000 feet of strata. Okay, from the granite rock all the way up through the Tapete sandstone, red wall limestone, the Grand Canyon rim rock. Then there's the Grand Staircase going into southern Utah, into central Utah, where you find the Morrison Formation and some of the other dinosaur-bearing layers, and then all the way up to the Wasatch Formation and some of the lavas on the plateau, the high plateaus of Wyoming and Colorado. There's the red wall limestone. There's the Morrison Formation where the dinosaur graveyard occurs. And that's where Earl Douglas, 1909, found the skeleton of Brontosaurus. The Morrison Formation is kind of a reddish formation. It kind of looks like the rocks, some of the red rocks you have around here in Birmingham, doesn't it? You know Red Mountain? Have you seen the road cut through Red Mountain? What an interesting road cut that is. They dug that for the highway to go through there, but you see the strata. The same thing up in northern Utah. You see the reddish and gray layers, similar to what we see down here in Birmingham. There you see some of the bones that were excavated in the wall at Dinosaur National Monument. Dinosaur National Monument. And the idea of sauropod. There's other organisms. There are clams. There's sea fossils. All kinds of things associated with it. And so the boy wanted to build a brontosaurus from parts. He got the parts list for brontosaurus. Have you ever built a kit? And when you get the kit from the hobby store, you have a parts list. Okay, well, you can get a parts list for brontosaurus just like you can get for the truck you're building or the model aircraft or something like that. Anyway, the parts list had this unusual skull on it, and the boy immediately noticed that. And he wanted to rebuild Brontosaurus from parts. He wanted to reconstruct the Brontosaurus's habitat, and he wanted to recreate the age of the reptiles, and he wanted to measure the time since the dinosaurs lived, supposedly about 145 million years ago. And he wanted to tell a grand story about organic evolution. And there's Brontosaurus. Notice he has a snub nose on him. He liked to eat ferns, according to the story. And if you look at the habitat, there's lots of ferns around, and there's some conifers. You see some conifers there? And maybe a little bit of cycad kind of things, but you don't see any angiosperms or flowering plants. And notice this, as you're looking around, there's lots of small reptiles on in there, and maybe something flying a little bit, a bird-like organism. But what do you see? You see no mammals, okay? No mammal from the outcrop. And then you see in the diagram the swamp, okay? And, of course, Brontosaurus, because of his big body, had to live in a swamp. You know, his prodigious body prevented him from being very mobile, and so he had to be in water, and so he would just kind of reach out of the swamp and grab ferns along the shore. Okay, you got that idea? Okay, some of the other dinosaurs, like Allosaurus and Strepiomyus, and some of those guys, they were out there on land running around, but Brontosaurus was pretty much confined to the swamp. The boy identified mystery objects from a television program. It was called Science Attic in San Francisco, California. And the Science Attic program wanted to engage kids in science. And so on the TV program, they had a mystery object one day. They had a dinosaur cervical vertebrae, and they put it on the on television, and the boy wrote in and started identifying the mystery object. And each week the TV program would put on a mystery object. The boy would write in a description what he thought the mystery object was. And after about a month or two, the boy's mom got a call from the TV station. And the TV station said, "Is this kid for real? And if he is, let's talk about it." And so one day he got a call from the TV station. A TV station said, "We would like to have you on television." And for 3 years, the boy was on television in KQED television in San Francisco, California. And he was doing science experiments for other kids during the time of the Sputnik era, if you know what I mean there. And, of course, engineers and scientists were kind of in short supply when the space age began. And so the boy got very interested in the subject. Well, so the boy taught on television with other children under the supervision of professional scientists. Brontosaur, the snub-nosed dinosaur. He lived in the watery swamp, which helped support his prodigious body mass. He shared his Jurassic Park environment with other large, sluggish, and lumbering beasts. Okay, he lived 145 million years ago, and he lived during the age of the reptiles, without mammals, without flowering plants, without grasses, without birds, that kind of thing. And then the animals and plants were evolving toward the modern world, toward mammals, flowering plants, and birds. Okay, you've heard that, haven't you? You've heard that idea. The idea of the age of reptiles. The problem was geologic evidence confronts the great myth surrounding Brontosaurus. And the boy became very involved in this a story that didn't seem to be accurate. They had the wrong head on the dinosaur's body. It was a Diplodocus skull, and the kid from the parts list knew it was a Diplodocus skull on the body, and the body looked like the vertebrae, and especially the tail and the hip, looked like what? Some kind of a patasaurus. And Apatosaurus has already been named, and Diplodocus had already been named, and so it looked like some kind of a mix-up had gone on. Then he studied the fossil deposit where Brontosaurus was found. The boy discovered that, or looked at it. It was a Jurassic jumble, not a Jurassic Park. You know what a Jurassic Park is? That's a wonderful, pristine, calm, and placid environment where the dinosaurs had unlimited opportunities to roam on the countryside. But what did it look like? He found evidence of Jurassic jumble. In other words, some type of mixing and transport. And then the age of the reptiles had mammals in it, fruit trees, and birds. Okay, and the story didn't have mammals, fruit trees, and birds in it. Those were supposed to evolve later. In other words, the descendants were with the ancestors. And then the 145 million years ago was based on radioisotope extrapolation, the potassium-argon dating method. And the supposed Jurassic Park was supposed to be 145 million years ago, but even that could be questioned. And is evolution the greatest nature myth of the 20th century? That's what the boy confronted. The boy discovered Brontosaurus as a composite of two creatures. You've heard about jackalope. You know what a jackalope is? Okay, it's a jackrabbit and an antelope. You can put the two together, and that's makes a chimera or a mixture of two different creatures. That's what Brontosaurus is. It's kind of like a jackalope. Okay, when the boy graduated from high school and went to college, they commemorated the event by issuing a postage stamp. And are you interested in the postage stamp? There it is, the postage stamp, alive and well in 1970 when he graduated from University of Washington, the boy. And there it is. Who's that right there? Notice the snub nose? That's Brontosaurus. Okay, and there's Stegosaurus, and there's Allosaurus, and all the Jurassic Park. Very familiar, isn't it? Okay, that's and some of us older generation, we remember when a postage stamp used to be 6 cents, right? 6 cents, and now what's a postage stamp? 43 cents or something like 45 cents. They keep changing it, and they don't even tell you now what it is. Anyway, the age of the reptiles. By the way, have you noticed something about the way I tell the story about the boy? I'm the boy. Okay, I'm telling you a story about me. Okay, I'm the one that had this passion for Brontosaurus, and I couldn't build him. Okay, I couldn't reconstruct his environment, and I kept finding evidence of birds, mammals, and flowering plants with the dinosaur. And so the Age of Reptiles story kind of was a myth. I recognize it was a myth. And that's why I went to university, was to explode the Jurassic Park myth. Okay, and what happened? The Jurassic Park myth continued, right? It continues to today. Brontosaurus has been corrected, but a lot of the other aspects of the Jurassic Park myth are not correct. The boy learned how geologic evidence could be used to correct the errors in the story of Brontosaurus. Okay. Anyway, that's isn't that interesting? And by 1970, it was certain that Brontosaurus was a mixture of two different animals, the skull and the body. And so this head of the Brontosaurus needed to be removed and put in. And so later, Earl Douglas, they put on the Apatosaurus. Now notice the Apatosaurus. Look at the skull of the Apatosaurus. See, it's kind of a duckbill kind of thing. And it has peg-like teeth, not fang-like teeth. And you can see why they didn't like Andrew Carnegie, the museum builder, didn't like the the original idea of what the brontosaurus was like. It was really an apatosaurus already described, okay? And so once you had the right skull on the animal, it was there. Now, the skull was found on the articulated vertebra column. It was seen about 4 feet away from the end of the neck of the fossil, right in the deposit. They did not want to put the skull that was right there onto the cervical vertebrae. So it's really an apatosaurus, okay? It's kind of a little bit of a duck bill, kind of a pointy snout. And it occurs at Dinosaur National Monument. At Dinosaur National Monument, they built a visitor center over this wall. And there's the wall of the Jurassic, of the Quarry Sandstone member. And the Quarry Sandstone member of the Morrison Formation is 50 feet thick, and the wall sits up there. Here you can see what the wall looks like a little bit. The wall is there, and then right there is the wall. There's the visitor center. And here you see the wall with some of the paleontologists excavating it. Of course, it's the home, obviously, recognized, was the home of Brontosaurus. Question, who is this boy? It's me, right? Okay, so I was the boy. He's talking to you right now. He grew up to be a professional geologist and science researcher. Okay, and do you want to become a paleontologist? You can do it. Just pay attention to and keep interested in science and learn how to critically evaluate things. Don't accept the party or what the media is telling you. Here's the wall at Dinosaur National Monument. Now, what we need to do is get back to the original Jurassic Park evidence and reconstruct it. Here you see the wall. And on the wall there at Dinosaur National Monument are about 1,200 bones, a tangle of bones, 100 victims, 12 species, 1,500 bones, okay, on that wall. Isn't that interesting? And notice, do you notice how some of the dinosaurs seem to be articulated? See those bones there? But then there's no head on that particular thing. Notice the hip structure and some of the other things about the... So it's a tangle of dinosaurs, 100 victims, 12 species, 1,500 bones. What is the most abundant fossil in the wall at Dinosaur National Monument? A good question to ask. And if you ask the question and look for the answer, you might be surprised. Is the most abundant fossil dinos? The answer is, if you look at the wall very carefully, the most common fossil in Quarry Sandstone is clam. Unio, the genus Unio. And so the clam is more abundant than the dinosaurs. Now, isn't that getting interesting? Okay, so if you take a look at the clues and put the pieces together, most common fossil is Unio. Now, think about it. What did dinos eat? The dinos are sitting there in the deposit, and it's a sandstone layer, and there's lots of abundant clams around there. Did they eat clams? Nah, okay. They ate, probably, they were vegetarian. The peg-like teeth of Apatosaurus, I think, are not for crunching clams. It's probably for digesting foliage, right? Plant material. There are also snails in the deposit. Isn't that interesting? And some of the marine snails. So what's going on there? Marine and non-marine, and there's the deposit. A third clue is there's a colossal amount of explosive volcanic products surrounding the fossil. Now, you remember the Jurassic Park, always in the background, way back there, is an erupting volcano. But in the foreground, it's calm and placid. Okay. A colossal amount of volcanic products surround the fossils. In fact, look at this. You can see the red beds, but the quarry sandstone member has all this gray clay around it, and that's volcanic ash. Here is the Morrison Formation at Dinosaur National Monument. The Morrison Formation is extremely extensive, from New Mexico to Texas, all the way up into Saskatchewan in Canada. And it's very persistent. And then the other next thing to think about it is, look at this. It's around the bones are volcanic fragments, abundant. You see the pebbles. Those are pieces of lava rock, okay, or basalt and andesite, those kind of rocks. So clue number four is fossils are deposited in a pebble-rich, mud-like slurry. You see the mud-like slurry, kind of you get an idea of that. And clue number four is the mud-like slurry. Notice the volcanic pebbles and chert pebbles and clam fossils embedded in a muddy matrix around the fossil bones. Isn't that interesting? The bone is in the inclined within the bedding. The bedding, so this bone is sitting there and it's not flat to the depositional surface. And there's all kinds of things that clues about this that are interesting. So anyway, is it a Jurassic Park like the diagram? All the fossil fragments are transported. All fossils transported. No buried Jurassic Park. Is it getting interesting now as you think about the clues about how the dinosaurs are buried there? No buried Jurassic Park. Okay, so the myth needs to go away. Anyway, there it is. And you start thinking about it. And yeah, where is all the food that the dinos ate? The plants. They've been transported and all that's been winnowed away or put in elsewhere. And there's some type of volcanic process going on. It looks like mud flows, a giant slurry, like cement mix or slurry or something like that. So the Dinosaur National Monument Quarry is only one of 20 dino graveyards in the Morrison Formation. Here's a map showing some of the... there's Dinosaur National Monument. But look at this. There's all kinds of other locations in the Morrison Formation where you find a tangle of dinos. And so the dinos, the dino fossils are distributed throughout the Morrison Formation, and there are thousands of them, okay, and Dinosaur National Monument is the most famous, especially from the early collections. How old are the dinosaur fossils? The clay stone very near the top of the quarry sandstone at Dinosaur National Monument yielded a 135.2 plus or minus 0.55 million-year potassium-argon date in 1986, gave a 152.9 plus or minus 0.12 million-year argon-argon date in 1991. Okay, what is the true age? The age of the Morrison Formation has been the chief point of dispute for over 70 years as of 1944. As of 1998, one of the significant unresolved problems relating to the Morrison Formation is its age, both chronostratigraphically and biostratigraphically. The isotope age of the Morrison Formation in the Western Interior is described in this report. And so who knows how old it is? Does anybody have a correct age? You know, the rock isn't embedded in the ground with a little tag on it saying how many millions of years old it is. It what? Has to be interpreted. So some people use potassium-argon dating or argon-argon dating to guess the age of the reptile. Okay, question. What is wrong with this picture? Basically everything. Okay, are you with me? Okay, the boy grew up on this picture, and what? He learned that the picture is a myth. Answer, definitely wrong. They got the wrong head on the swamp dino. The park is a fiction. There's no flowering plants. There's no grass. There's no mammals, no birds. Look it. There's a mountain back there, but there are no volcanoes, no clams, no mud flows. They need more small dinos. Okay, are you with me on this? Probably wrong. There's no humans. And notice they depict the dinosaurs without what? A global flood. Could there be a global flood like the Bible describes that buried dinosaurs? That's a big thing. So the myth suppresses the truth. There it is. It's a myth. Okay, the myth. An icon promoting evolution. Are you with me on that? Okay, there's a story being told. It's being spun by the media. It's helped spun by museums like Carnegie Museum in Pittsburgh, the museum right next to where I live. All of this is promoting a myth, right? A myth about evolution, okay? And not much is true about the myth, okay? The solution is discover the historic framework of the Bible and use it to understand dinosaurs. Was there animal death in the world before Adam? Unlikely. So these animals that are dead and died are probably after Adam. Okay. We can probably place dinos in creation week. Place dinos in the flood. You see where I'm going on it? Look for dinos in the text of Scripture. Teach the evidence that the wall at Dinosaur National Monument is really what? A catastrophic burial, a flood deposit. So you look at the Grand Canyon strata, and what do you see? You see layers of rock, limestone, sandstone, and shale, and you see the marine fossils in there, and what is it? Marine death. Okay, it's a death record. And the same thing with Dinosaur National Monument, you see a death record. And so it looks like that's the story. Here's some scriptures. And behold, even I am bringing the flood of water upon the earth to destroy all flesh in which the breath of life under heaven, everything that is on earth shall perish. Genesis 6:17. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 6. Whereby the world that then was being overflowed with water perished. Peter is talking about the flood, and he's issuing a prophecy about the end times that people will come and say all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation. That sounds like the Jurassic Park myth, but he refutes it, and he says, whereby the world that then was being overflowed with water perished. The all things continue as they were from the beginning of the creation is refuted by Peter, where he says that the world was overflowed with water and perished. What is that? That's the global flood. But as in the days of Noah, so shall the coming of Son of Man be. When Jesus comes again, is that a global event? Or is he just coming to Birmingham? You know what I mean? Okay. No, it's a global event. And what? As in the days of Noah, that was a global event, right? And so it's interesting. So Scripture. So interesting discovery. I'm a paleontologist and a sedimentologist by training. I study rock strata layers. That's what I study. And they have lots of fossils in them. That makes it interesting. Anyway, the Morrison Formation is over there in Utah and Colorado and Wyoming, a little bit in Arizona and New Mexico. Of course, it goes from Texas all the way up into Saskatchewan. But out west, there's no Morrison Formation, but there's these giant volcanoes. And there's the Independence Dike Swarm in California. And I've been studying that. I think that's a gigantic fissure system that had a different style of volcano. And something like 4,000 cubic miles of volcanic ash came out and spilled into the central United States area. And this is the source, likely, of the volcanic ash. And the direction of transport indicates that. And so these dinos have moved from somewhere else, probably off to the west. And they were swept up in this volcanic eruption that was going on, colossal volcanic eruption, and they got buried in the flood that was associated with a colossal volcanic eruption. Sound familiar? It sounds like the global flood. Are dinos in the Bible? You know, the word dinosaur was coined by Richard Owen in 1844. When was the King James Bible written? It was written in 1611, right? So the word dinosaur couldn't appear in the Bible because the Bible was translated in English before the word dinosaur was even invented. But are there dinosaurs in the Bible? That's a good question. Are animals like dinosaurs described? There's dragons. Tanim in Genesis 1:21, Psalm 48, Isaiah 27. Their general term for large land animals are sea monsters. Behemoth is the animal in Job chapter 40, the most powerful land animal, and his tail's like a cedar tree, that kind of thing. And that's could be a description of these big sauropod-like organisms. And then Leviathan is the other term used in the Bible. It's the most powerful animal in the sea. You know, there's Mosasaur and some really big predatory animals in the ocean and sea fossils. So maybe Leviathan's describing that. Okay, so where? Locality in Utah. But there are worldwide layers, right? Locally in Utah is where you find Brontosaurus, or the animal like Brontosaurus, Apatosaurus. But these are the worldwide layers. What? A watery catastrophe. When? Was it 145 million years ago? 135 million years ago? Whatever dating method you use. After the fall, a few thousand years ago, likely during the flood. Okay, so they're probably a pre-flood animal assemblage. Who? The entire pre-flood world. Why? God wanted to purify his creation and start over again. He started over again with land-dwelling, air-breathing animals that survived the flood on the ark. Remember the story? So the boy who wanted to build Brontosaurus, the goal was he wanted to reconstruct Brontosaurus and the dinosaurs' world. The problem, he found geologic evidence that confronted the great myth surrounding Brontosaurus. And the solution, he discovered the historic framework of the Bible can be used to understand dinosaurs. So the Bible is the key to dinosaurs. Could the boy rebuild Brontosaurus? No, he couldn't. Is it buried in a Jurassic Park? Of course not. Did it live during the age of reptiles? There wasn't a separate age of reptiles. Did it live 145 million years ago? Were you there? How do you know how old it is? Does organic evolution explain dinosaurs? Probably a different explanation for that. And the Jurassic Park myth was erected to explain dinosaurs in terms of organic evolution. Are dinosaurs mentioned in the Bible? Likely. There's some interesting references, but the word dinosaur wasn't coined until 1844, Richard Owen. So no wonder the Bible doesn't use the word dinosaur. It wasn't there. Does the Bible's account of creation and the global flood help to understand dinosaurs? Yes. The biblical framework is the way we should go. So I'm glad I can present this lecture, Dinosaurs and Fossils, The Boy Who Wanted to Build Brontosaurus, Going Beyond the Jurassic Park Myth. Okay, can I have some questions from you? Got a question? I think we can hear everybody here in the room. How many of you want to become paleontologists and study this kind of stuff? Do you like fossils and rocks and mud and things like I did? My mother noticed I had a propensity to mud, okay, like mud puddles. And I had a rock collection when I was 8 years old, and including dino fossils. Okay, so if you want to be a paleontologist, think about maybe the career track of getting training in geology from like Cedarville University, a good university which has a Christian and God-honoring commitment to the Bible. That's a great thing. And find professors like me that can talk to you about dinosaurs and all the things you go along with the dinosaurs. A story, and learn the facts about dinosaurs, and learn about the myths and other things that are going on. So, good. Question. Got some questions? Yes. Right.
So that they could introduce the science of dinosaurs. Would you consider dragon and dinosaur almost synonyms?
I think so. There was probably human experience with large animals that goes back thousands of years. All the major ancient civilizations like the Chinese, the Mideastern civilization, that kind of thing, they have dragon legends, yeah, and so dinosaurs, get involved there, and so when Richard Owen introduced the word dinosaur, he did it to distance himself from the dragon legends that were out there. Now, when we talk about dinosaurs at the wall of Dinosaur National Monument, we have to talk to everybody for about an hour, telling them to quit thinking about the Jurassic Park myth, because that's a myth. The word dinosaur is just another recycled myth. Okay, so what do we learn about humans? We tend to deceive ourselves, don't we? Okay, and we like a new story. I guess a new story is interesting, but yeah, so that's fascinating. So Richard Owen did try to introduce and the word dinosaur is a useful word. Okay, maybe more useful than dragon, leviathan, behemoth, that tannin, the other Hebrew words for dinosaur or like a dinosaur. But yeah, it needs to be revised. Good question. Any other questions? Yes. Right. Okay, well, let's talk about the fossil fuel called coal. Okay, have lots of coal around Birmingham, don't we? Okay, and Birmingham is kind of the Pittsburgh of the South. Or the way I like to say it is Birmingham, or Pittsburgh is the Birmingham of the North. Okay, and a Pittsburgh coal bed there made the steel industry, the coal bed around here, plus the iron deposits. The iron deposits in Red Mountain made the iron industry and the coal smelt, coal-fired furnaces that made the steel. And so the steel production was right here. And so that's cool. But fossil coal is from floated plants that have been buried. Did you hear my lecture last night when I talked about Mount St. Helens? Mount St. Helens, I did a study of my PhD dissertation was on the floating mat model for the origin of coal. And it was a different explanation from the swamp explanation for the origin of coal. Have you detected the boy became dissatisfied with swamps? Okay, swamps were part of the Jurassic Park myth, and so Jurassic Park myth and swamps got into the idea about how coal was made. But coal forms in large freshwater swamps, according to the conventional interpretation. I offered a different interpretation that coal formed from large masses of plant material which were floated and then rained down detritus and deposited underneath floating log mat. Quite different story than the conventional swamp model for the origin of coal. And petroleum is buried liquid material that moves around in the earth. And natural gas, of course, is there with petroleum. And that's probably algal material that was buried in the sediment, and it's mobilized because it got hot down there and changed. It doesn't take millions of years to make coal or oil or gas. Coal was made by my professor who taught me geology. He made it in a laboratory in a matter of weeks. He could make wood into coal. And other experiments, we can make wood into petrified wood, not into coal, but into petrified or agatized or silicified wood. We can do that rapidly. And let's see, petroleum can be formed rapidly. We know the laboratory conditions for taking algae and converting it to petroleum, and that's done in the laboratory. And there's some natural hot springs where that happens. And natural gas can be formed rapidly from catalytic cracking. And that's what they do. They make natural gas in certain situations from large oil deposits. So fossil fuels are evidence of what? Rapid burial in the fossil record, in the geologic record. So that's cool. Question. Yeah. Okay. Well. Yeah. Okay. Very well stated. Okay. Question. But think about what science is. Is science into disproving things? Well, it is in a way. But don't put on my tombstone, he disproved potassium argon, argon argon, or carbon-14 dating. Okay, what does a scientist supposed to do? Supposed to talk about what is right, okay? Supposed to offer an explanation that's true. And so there's all this information out there that might be true or not, and so there's all this myth. There's myths. And so my job is not to explode the myths. Okay, believe it or not, after what? 50 years as a professional geologist, my job is not to explode myths. My job is to propose an explanation for what is really there. That's what my job is to do. Now, potassium-argon dating is, I've done quite a bit of it, but who knows? Doesn't it, no name tags, no age tags on those rocks, and those are just guesses. Carbon-14 dating is probably the best dating method. It only gives ages of thousands of years, and there's now dinosaur soft tissue that's been found. Are you with me on this? Have you heard about that, the soft tissue? It's flexible tissue, not mineralized tissue or silicified. It's the actual molecules of the tissue of dinosaurs. Been found, like, for example, in the Triceratops brow horn. Friend of mine, he extracted flexible tissue from the brow horn of the Triceratops, and that's a dating method. Do you think that's millions of years old, that flexible tissue can survive buried in a heat up and cool down environment in Wyoming, Elk Creek in Wyoming? No. So, you know, that type of dating. And the C14 measurable quantities in flexible dinosaur tissue, that kind of thing, indicates only thousands of years. So who knows how old the dinos are? Could they be thousands of years? There's evidence to suggest that. So that's a great point to discuss. So, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Could the Bible be true? Yeah. Okay. Cool, isn't it? God's word could be authentic truth about all kinds of animals, like dinosaurs and humans and birds and reptiles and yeah. Flowering plants. Okay, yes. Very good. Yep. It has, Mary Schweitzer has published in Science Magazine, even some of the very reputable magazines about dinosaur soft tissue. So soft tissue was originally found in just one or two sites in the Hell Creek Formation in Wyoming. Mary Schweitzer described it, and everybody said, well, it could be contamination. They argued against it being legitimate soft tissue. And then she, to her credit, she explained and found more deposits of it, and then it became widely recognized that there's lots of soft tissue in those formations, and so soft dinosaur tissue is now been scientifically demonstrated, and so the theories now need to take that into account. And so that's the cool thing about science is, you know, we find stuff that real good stuff that makes our theory go. So how do you find out about these things? One way to keep track of dino soft tissue and dinos is probably to track some of the creation magazines. For example, Acts and Facts, Institute for Creation Research, Answers Research Journal, in Answers in Genesis publications. There's Creation Magazine that Creation Ministries International publishes. So those are some of the places you might go for that. Yep, and they're usually pretty good, and they have scholarly references. You want to look for references, technical references. And so you guys can become experts in dinosaurs, just like I did, right? I got expert in dinosaur, and I became a critic of the dinosaur story that I was being told. And so that's the cool thing. Your question. Okay. Yeah, how about Apatosaurus? Did he live in a herd or group? There's some footprint fossils of Apatosaurus that indicate that they may have been in a herd, and they're tracking in one direction, perhaps, and maybe they were fleeing from what? Flood catastrophe that was coming on. Okay, that type of thing. That's what some people think. And they did walk on land or on an exposed surface or slightly wet surface because you can see the footprints. So there's all kinds of interesting things. It's probably not a swamp. Okay, Apatosaurus didn't need to live in a swamp. He could have waded through a swamp, I suppose. But so you're asking the right question. Good question. Yes, back there. Okay, your question is, are the strata at Dinosaur National Monument worldwide or very extensive? Yes. The answer is yes. Dinosaur National Monument is not unique, and the Morrison Formation, which is the layer where a lot of the dinosaurs are found, are different layers. I was over in at Bet Zayit on the west side of Jerusalem. And do you know what I found over there? Dino footprints in limestone. Okay, limestone layer with dinosaur footprints. Okay, when I was down in Glen Rose, Texas, what did I see? I saw dino footprints. Looked like Apatosaurus footprints to me, very similar. Okay, I can't tell you exactly what species, but Apatosaurus, something like that, a sauropod, a four-footed trackway, that type of thing, in limestone. Buried underneath what? Marine clams. Unio clams. Okay, so when you find dino deposits, you find some really weird things, okay? And they it doesn't look like business as usual or a common placid environment the Jurassic Park myth promotes. Other questions? Yes. Have dinosaurs been found in Asia? Yes. Mongolia, for example. The deserts, southern Asia, yes. And let me think. China, okay, yes. I'm thinking how about Kazakhstan and some places out that way, which would be the eastern side of Middle East. I think there's dinos out there. Yep. How deep are they? The Mongolian dinosaurs are at the surface. Roy Chapman Andrews, I remember reading his book about how he'd go around in his Jeep driving around in Mongolia, and he was looking for dinosaurs, and he found some good dino fossils right at the surface. So they're not very deep in some cases. Now, some of those layers with the dinosaurs go deep underneath Denver, Colorado, for example. The Morrison Formation is down there in Denver Basin, but it may be down thousands of feet underneath the earth, and there probably are dino fossils down there. There's the Dakota Sandstone at Red Rock Park in west side of Denver, and that's got footprints. three-toed tracks, trackways. You know, the three-toed dinosaur, what could that be? Everybody thinks of T-Rex, but it's more likely some type of duck-billed dinosaur. Or Allosaurus or something like that. Yep, so they can be found various depths, but at the surface is the best place to go look for fossils. Otherwise, you'd have to drill for fossils, and that's not easy. Yes, your question. Do you think Noah took dinos on the ark? Is that the question? Yeah. What do you say to that question? Here's how I respond to that. Read the Bible very carefully. What does it say? Did Noah go out and round up all the animals and bring them to the ark? Did he have a checklist? I found this one, this one, this one, this one. In other words, all the different kinds of animal, air-breathing, land-dwelling animals. No, the text of Scripture says the animals came to him, okay, and so he took them aboard the ark. So there was some type of unusual animal behavior, wild animals moving onto a boat, okay, with Noah, kind of a nutcase in his world, right? He built this large boat in his backyard, and all these animals are coming in, and he's talking about repentance, and people refuse to hear it because the people in that day, point of view, their hearts was evil continually. That's what the Genesis text says. So that's a good way to think. Yes, your question. Yeah, so what am I thinking about the age of those things in evolution and creation? I think they're just thousands of years old. For example, the carbon-14 dating method indicates thousands of years. The flexible dinosaur tissue, the preserved protein-rich things indicate that it's not millions of years that it's been buried in the earth. That type of thing. So and exposed at the surface. So that's I like the idea of the flood of creation and the flood explaining dinosaurs. So dinosaurs are created by God on their beasts of the field. Created on what day? What day were the beasts of the field created? Day 5, right? Okay, and man was created on day 6, right? So you can think. Fish and that type of thing, and some beasts of the field created, and so all of that's going on. So yeah, make it put dinosaurs in the framework of thinking of the Bible. That's what I like to do. Yes. Were there dinosaurs what? Yeah, dinosaur, is T-Rex the biggest? Is that what you're asking? Most dangerous? Velociraptor looked pretty bad. Okay. I would rather have fighting a T-Rex than a Velociraptor. Because they're obviously really fast moving. Okay, and you know what I'm talking about. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. What do you think about dino legends? Okay, dragon legends. And did man and dinosaurs coexist? That would seem that way. And they probably lived in different environments. So the dinosaur habitat was buried separately from the area where on Earth where humans lived, okay, and I don't know if I'd like to live with T-Rex and Velociraptor and some of those things. Yeah, and it says in the Genesis text that all flesh had corrupted its way upon the earth, right? And so predation and carnivory probably were very much accelerated or somehow accentuated in the pre-flood period, and that's why one of the reasons why God said that all flesh is corrupt, and why He sent the flood upon the earth. Other questions? Yeah. So I became a critic of the age of reptiles, right? Because I started thinking about things. And so they tell you what's not there to make the age, right? Make it an age that is separate from today, right? And that was the story that they were trying to tell me. And not necessarily true. And so, that stratum layer is probably associated with the late part of the flood, the global flood, and so the dinosaur habitat was being buried about that time, and so you're seeing the Jurassic Park, but it's been sorted and transported, and that's been interpreted as a geologic age, but it's really it's the Jurassic jumble, right? The Jurassic jumble, not the Jurassic Park. And that's not a geologic age of reptiles, but a geologic instant during the burial of the flood. That would be the antidote to the misinformation in the myth. Yes. Yeah, another really good question. So, what killed off the dinosaurs? Okay, could it be a global flood? Could it be a meteor impacting the Earth? A big, huge impact event? That the mystery of why dinosaurs became extinct has really never been solved. You see what I'm saying? And evolution never provided an answer to that story, because dinos should evolve into other things. They can't evolve into mammals because we already have mammals there. Okay, so the mammals have already evolved, and the age of reptiles is a myth. So, what killed them off? Now, when I was at Penn State University in 1979, the specialists came to the university and were talking about the Cretaceous-Tertiary boundary, the KT boundary, and they were talking about it being a slow transition. And I remember the professors talking about this, and then what happened in about 1980 was people argued the same evidence that for a slow transition at the KT boundary, they were arguing for a catastrophic change and a giant sea wave and big impact in Yucatan Peninsula in southern Mexico, and that type of thing, and there's an iridium layer that appears to be global, associated with dinosaurs, and there's some type of platinum group metals, which are rare in the surface of the Earth, but are more common in the mantle of the Earth, that material might give you a signature of some type of mass kill event. Okay, and so that's what we're isn't that interesting that dinosaur mass kill is now okay to talk about? In other words, the establishment can tolerate that kind of thinking. If they can tolerate that, maybe they could tolerate me talking to them about it. You know what I mean? And so this is great. We live in an interesting time. So evolution doesn't explain many things. And so as we as scientists can get involved with trying to help answer the real question, you know, the hard questions. Your question? Yes. Yep. Okay. Yeah. So, a complicated question. You know, we don't know where the ark started. We know where it landed in the mountains of Ararat, probably the highland area in the Middle East. But where did the ark start? Floating. What was the distribution of the continents before the flood? I think they were joined together. They could have split apart during the time of the flood. Okay, are you thinking the way I'm thinking? Okay, and there's lots of things to think about here. But, so dinos and humans could have crossed paths in that pre-flood world. They probably lived in different habitats and probably associated with dino legends. And then, of course, after the flood, dinos may have been on the ark. Okay, you could carry eggs, especially. But if God wanted Noah, well, he would roll some eggs onto the ark or something like that, whatever. What do you think? He brought animals, okay, and so dinos didn't survive long after the flood, but some of these dino legends, our dragon legends, indicate that they may have existed after the flood. And so, yes. So by the time of the Tower of Babel, when languages and people were distributed widely, the animals had already distributed before that. Okay, so the animals distributed widely right after the flood. They got out of the ark, and the mandate for the animals in Genesis 9 was what? Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. It was a restated command, and so that's that. And so the animals survived, why the men didn't, and that's when the Tower of Babel incident happened in hundreds of years after the flood. People said, well, think about what the world may have been like. There might have been all kinds of natural disasters. Landscapes were not stable. There's volcanoes going off. There's earthquakes still. When Noah got out of the ark, the birds were not chirping, and it was a wonderful world like some of the Bible stories that we think about what it may have been like. It was kind of a turbulent world, and so maybe men said, okay, well, let's hang out in a place and build a culture. We're not pioneers. Let's not distribute over the earth with the animals. And so they refused to follow God's covenant with Noah. Okay. its continental split, or continental sprint, I call it. Yep. Okay. So when I went to school, the idea that continents were together was very much unpopular, very unpopular. We knew about Alfred Wegener's theory of continental drift, okay? But that in the geology classroom, it was never talked about, okay? And it was derogatory when we talked about continental drift. And then in the 1960s, when continental drift and plate tectonics became popular, then we started thinking about it. But obviously, by the time of the Tower of Babel, the continents were widely distributed. So archaeologically, we have evidence that there were separations between continents. And so that's in the post-flood period when that happened. So continents had already split apart, and so the people had to get to North American continent from the Middle East, probably across land bridges like the Bering Sea, from Asia. And so wide distribution of people in the time of the Tower of Babel and the division of languages. Bible answers a lot of questions, doesn't it? Okay, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Did you detect in my telling the story about the boy that the boy believed in evolution? Yeah. I grew up in Silicon Valley in California. That was the kind of hangout headquarters for the evolution establishment. And that's where it spread out. And so everybody around me was talking about evolution. And when I was 12 years old, I noticed that when I would talk to people about a subject like evolution, they would be interested. When I would talk to them about something else, they wouldn't be as interested. And so when I was 12 years old, I read the book, The Meaning of Evolution by George Gaylord Simpson. I wanted to read that book to understand the evolutionary way of thinking. And that helped me understand something about the Jurassic Park myth. Okay, but I never was a fan of evolution too much. I realized that it was a story, just like the Brontosaurus story. And but I didn't know about creation. And then I started investigating the Bible. And when I was at universities, when I understood the claims of Christ that he wanted to be my Lord and Savior, and that's when I accepted Christ as my Lord, and he gave me information that helped me understand the rest of the story, or the story better. So that's my story. And I'm an evolution science kid who became a creationist. Believe it or not, okay? And a lot of people have a hard time with that when they hear that story, because why? Because they think that evolution is so persuasive that nobody could leave the evolution paradigm behind and join the creation paradigm, which is what I did. So I think that's the power of God in my life, okay, or whatever, following Christ helped me do geology research better. What? Okay.
the truth of the Bible. Well, yeah.
So what does that say? Okay, you know 2 Timothy 3:16, all scriptures inspired by God and acceptable for doctrine, for reproof and correction in righteousness, that the man of God may be thoroughly furnished unto all good works. All good works could include what? Fossil collecting. Okay, so God's word thoroughly furnishes me to collect fossils. Why not? Okay, that's my story. Eric, have we any other questions? Well, I've enjoyed being with you, and I hope you think. Seriously about science as your career. If you want to go to college, definitely consider a Christian college with a good science geology program. That's Cedarville University, Liberty University, Loma Linda University, places like that where my students go.